You may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Bill Miller from the Arlington Public Defender's Office, representing Garcia Tirado. I'm going to ask that 3 minutes of my time be reserved for rebuttal.
Now, for all the lawyers who are present or may be listening to this recording, I can't guarantee that. And you probably have seen that that's not exactly how it happens sometimes, but I'll try.
Thank you, Your Honor.
But if a lawyer doesn't ask, I don't feel the obligation to help you out. So for everybody who wonders, why do we allow it to happen? We allow it to happen because the court is really interested in pursuing the questions they have. But if you don't ask, it's not my responsibility to help you out. So word of the wise to every lawyer in the Commonwealth, at least ask. Put 15 back on the clock. Go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to summarize the case in the following way. Essentially, this was a trial for rape. My client, Garcia Tirado, did not speak English during the interrogation. There was present, there was a detective, there was the police interpreter, and there was my client.
He had at least some passing familiarity with English, did he not?
Your Honor, I believe that is correct.
Okay. And then he also had, I would say, even more of a passing familiarity with Spanish.
I think that would be an accurate characterization or what was assumed by the trial court. Yes, Your Honor. But I think that is the issue is primarily the following, is that during the motion to suppress, the Commonwealth attorney brought the detective who did not speak Spanish and the videotape. The videotape was played. Essentially, I argued that the judge did not have a basis to determine whether our client, Garcia Tirado, waived his Miranda rights because nothing was known as to what was asked of our client by the interpreter and what the responses were from the client. And again, the interpreter was not present, so therefore no one could know what was being asked and what the answers were.
Let me ask you this. If the Fourth Circuit has explored this area, and if we adopt their test, can you still win? Or do we need to... I mean, it's persuasive only. We don't have to follow what they've said, but if we do, does that take the wind out of your sails?
Justice McCullough, are you referring to the language conduit?
Well, there were a number of cases, but the United States versus Zhu was one.
I believe you're referring to the language conduit argument. Again,
right.
I think that you have to look at a test, and one of the factors in that test is that who supplied the interpreter. And I think in that case you clearly had an interpreter who was working for the police, and that is one of the, if you will, strikes against the Commonwealth. There was an implicit bias, I believe, in that test that the interpreter is not an objective interpreter of what is being said.
And this was a police officer, so not just a translator.
This was a police officer, correct.
Okay.
And I would also point out that she also initially interviewed the complaining witness in this case. So I think that also is implicated as well. So I don't believe that...
And what the Fourth Circuit said was, except in unusual circumstances, an interpreter is no more than a language conduit. And as I read this record, you asked for your own translation, and you got that. And so presumably you didn't identify... I mean, translation can be a little tricky, you know, as you move from one language to another. But at least... As I understand, you didn't identify inaccuracies or shading or whatever. So that's why I was trying to figure out if this Fourth Circuit test was a sensible one that we ought to follow.
Well, in partial answer to your question, the transcript, the translation, was not presented into evidence and was not available for the Commonwealth attorney during the motion to suppress.
Okay.
So returning back to my...
Did you have it?
I did.
All right, so we're going to presume the officer added information to the translation that was never delivered by the suspect, and yet we have a transcript that refutes that presumption?
I would suggest, Your Honor, that it was the Commonwealth's burden at that point in time to provide the evidence that was required.
So a rule of law says we must presume officers manipulate and lie during translations to add information that is not being conduited from the suspect when there's no factual showing, and in fact the only factual showing we have suggests the contrary? What rule of law requires that?
Other than the fact that it's the Commonwealth's burden to prove by preponderance of the evidence that a waiver of Miranda was knowingly and intelligently given, during the motion to suppress, they did not provide that.
They didn't provide information that suggested that the officer added hearsay information to the purported translation, which is the very thing that made it admissible, is that they didn't do that.
I do not follow, Your Honor.
The officer testified I translated it accurately.
That was, Your Honor, that was during the trial.
Well, you've read the cases. They're in the briefs. The Commonwealth can rely on the evidence at trial to support an earlier denial of a motion to suppress. So, once again, what rule of law requires us to presume that an officer who's translating a suspect's Spanish, a highly trained officer, we're going to presume that they added information, which would be pretty corrupt. What rule of law requires us to make that presumption?
I don't think the court is required to make a presumption. I would merely return to the fact that the rule of law being, it's the Commonwealth's burden at the motion to suppress to demonstrate that the waiver was knowing voluntary. The added issue in our case is that our client was not a native Spanish speaker. He was a speaker of MAM, and MAM is an indigenous language of Guatemala.
Did he understand Spanish?
Are you asking me?
I'm asking what the record shows. Is there anything in the record that shows he did not understand Spanish?
I believe that if the court would look, and this is where if the court would entertain another argument, is that it is my contention that the record is ambiguous. If the court looks at the transcript, I think that it is unclear as to what he comprehended and what he did not comprehend. So that's where I believe, Your Honor, that
he listened to dialogue in Spanish and responded to dialogue in Spanish, did he not?
Correct.
He read Spanish. The record reflects that he read Spanish and appeared to understand what he was reading, does it not?
No. I will differ with Your Honor on one aspect.
Okay. Where in the record am I going to find a place where he appears to not understand what he is reading?
I think it's when, if the court is going to look at the transcript or the audio tape, he asks multiple times, he says, huh, what? And I think that what you see is you see, and this is where I believe and I would get to, Carroll and DePriest are not necessarily applicable to the Fifth Amendment, because this is going to require Your Honors to look at the individual transcript and the videotape and make an independent analysis, which I will submit is perhaps not the best usage of this court's rule. But I would go into something else, which is another...
I didn't get to the end of my question.
I'm sorry.
But I appreciate your response. The note that he wrote to the victim.
Yes, Your Honor.
Did he write that in Spanish?
He did.
Okay. And that was translated in the record, correct?
That was.
And based upon the fact that he both had dialogue in Spanish, read Spanish, although you indicate that perhaps there was some anomalies there, and wrote in Spanish, how can we not conclude that he had enough familiarity with Spanish to give a knowing waiver?
Because, Your Honor, I believe that the difference, the question is not, can he converse in Spanish? But the question is, can he knowingly and intelligently waive his Miranda through his understanding of Spanish? That's the question.
How many years had he been speaking Spanish?
Well, Your Honor, it's suggested that he'd been speaking for 12 years, but I believe that is... not a completely accurate indication from the record. And if I could refer to it, please. And that's in the transcript. How long have you been speaking Spanish? I think since I started school there in Guatemala. When, how old were you? I was about 7 years old, maybe. And I would point out that he was 19 years old at the time of the offense.
Okay, but so he'd been speaking Spanish since Guatemala. He's 7 years old. That's 19 minus 7 is...
I don't believe that we can make this conclusion that he's been speaking Spanish in a... At a level of sophistication that would allow him to knowingly and intelligently waive his Miranda. Again, the issue is
but
not...
But the trial court actually made a determination that he was. Is that correct?
Yes, but the trial court had no basis to make this determination.
Is that a finding of fact by the trial court?
The trial court based...
Is that a finding of fact?
I believe the answer is yes. It was
okay,
a finding
so
of fact.
So you have to find that it was an abuse of the trial court's discretion to make that finding of fact.
And the reason why it was...
No reasonable trial court would have made that finding of fact.
That's correct. And the reason why it's an abuse of discretion, Your Honors, is because what the trial court based its finding upon was upon words that the finder of fact, the trial judge, did not understand. He based his decision upon, I would suggest, demeanor. And that is simply not sufficient to determine if somebody knowingly and intelligently waived. For example, in the ruling...
Is that sufficient to determine if somebody knowingly and intelligently can communicate in the language, if the demeanor is a part of the determination?
I think if there were any other indicia in addition to demeanor, it might be sufficient. But I don't think it was in this case. And if I could point to some of the case law...
He wrote a letter in Spanish.
And, Your Honor, as Your Honor, I'm quite sure you're familiar from the brief. The letter was, I believe, 7 lines long and riddled with around 19 grammatical and spelling errors.
I think it was pretty clear what he was intending to say. I mean, yeah, grammatical and spelling, I'm not saying he got an A in class.
I understand that, Your Honor.
There cannot possibly be any doubt what he was trying to communicate in that letter.
However, there is a distinction between whether somebody can communicate in, I would characterize it as more or less rudimentary Spanish, versus whether he can knowingly, intelligently waive his Miranda through what is communicated to him in Spanish.
Well, is you have the right to an attorney if you want one. Is that translated into Spanish in some sophisticated way that the average Spanish language user would not understand?
I can't speculate as to that. All I know is that the evidence is that our client was unsophisticated. He had a sixth grade.
So essentially
education.
What would happen if we agreed with you, and I know you'll correct me, but essentially what would happen is every foreign language speaking suspect who is given Miranda rights under a foreign language is going to say, I've been talking in this language for 12 years. I wrote to my victim in Spanish. I understand Spanish, but the lawyer word, I never understood that. I thought he was talking about a tree.
I think it's worse than that, because you could have a native English speaker who doesn't speak standard English, you know, who's perhaps uneducated, and who would say, well, I don't have the eloquence of, a lawyer, and so ergo, I couldn't wait.
But that's not the case we have here. The case that we have is an individual who is being interrogated in a foreign language which is not his own.
How many years has he been in the United States?
From the record, Your Honor, I don't want to misstate the record. I believe it was not very long. I believe it was 2, but I could be mistaken.
Had he been in Guatemala exclusively until he came to the United States?
The record does not specify. I mean, the answer is no. He had not been any, to my knowledge, other than getting here to the United States. But there's nothing in the record.
When was the last time that he was in an environment where only Nam was spoken?
I believe in the record there's testimony from the mother of the complaining witness that they spoke Nam in the household.
You're into your rebuttal for whatever that's worth.
Thank you, Ron.
Good morning. May it please the Court. I'm Victoria Johnson on behalf of the Commonwealth. The trial court in this case properly admitted the videotape of the interrogation at the suppression hearing and properly found that the defendant knowingly and intelligently waived his Miranda right and denied the motion to suppress. As a matter of first principles, Your Honors, this court can look to the evidence that was adduced at trial in determining the motion to suppress issue. The defendant has argued on brief
Counsel, if we do that, do we get into the hearsay question and the what test to adopt for these translations?
I think that you still do, Your Honor. Okay. I've spent a lot of time thinking about that. I think that the evidence submitted at trial certainly answers the foundation issue, but my understanding is that the statements were made, you know, out of court, and then they were testified to by, you know, by a third party. And I think that
the statements out of court are by a party admission.
Yes, Your Honor, so. They're party admissions. And I think that's the answer to the hearsay issue under.
Right, but what I was getting at is, you know, if we're cabined to the what happened at the suppression hearing, then we have to figure out, you know, what we can look at under the Fourth Circuit test or something else. But if we look at the totality of the record, then it's a different hearsay analysis, maybe is the way to put it.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that's correct.
Right.
And I think that this is answerable under existing Virginia law. These are party admissions under 28030.
Because I think the translation issue is interesting, but I don't know if we get to it.
I don't think that you necessarily need to get to it, Your Honor. I was doing a little belt and suspenders analysis there in an effort to be thorough. But turning to the foundation issue at the beginning, here the detective testified at the suppression hearing that this was a DVD recording of an interrogation that she was involved with. The video itself shows the translation, you know, ongoing at the time. It was a contemporary translation. The trial court could see the defendant. He could tell that he was not confused. He was nodding along. He was reading along. He was agreeing. And to this day, the defendant has not pointed out errors in the translation itself. There are times in the translation, looking at App 404, where the defendant does say, you know, what or huh. But reading in context, that's appropriate to the context. Where the defendant is asking for more information or for clarification, not based on the a translation difficulty, but for what the meaning of the question was. He's demonstrating understanding and asking for further clarification of the question itself, not asking what the question was, if that makes sense. Furthermore, looking at the evidence adduced at trial, the translator testified at trial, testified that this was a true and accurate statement, and testified that she had translated everything accurately. For those reasons, we submit that there is plenty of foundational evidence in this record. Furthermore, the trial court did not make a mistake of fact when it decided that the defendant knowingly and intelligently waived his right to an attorney. Here, the defendant signed the waiver form, read the waiver form out loud in Spanish, demonstrated his understanding, signed the form. This court has said that is strong evidence of the validity of the waiver, and answered questions in Spanish for about an hour and 45 minutes, demonstrating his facility with the Spanish language. As the trial court found, the question is not whether he had to be questioned in his native language, but whether he was questioned and interviewed in a language in which he understood.
I mean, the fluency level that's required is sufficient to understand the warning and the consequences, not eloquence and mastery over the language.
Yes, Your Honor, and going to the court's earlier point, I think that comes into play as well with English speakers who perhaps are not, you know, overly educated or whatnot. In Moran v. Burbine, the Supreme Court of the United States explained that what was necessary to understand was the content of the warning, the simple content of the warning, not the legal strategy involved. And I think that here we certainly have that fluency level demonstrated. The defendant conceded on brief that the defendant had conversational Spanish language skills, and reading the translation in context, it's very apparent that the defendant understood the conversation and, in fact, chose to communicate in Spanish when he wrote the letter to the victim. I'm happy to answer any other questions the court may have, but it appears the court understands my argument. I would ask the court to affirm the conviction, and I rest on my brief for the remainder of my argument. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Briefly, the one thing that is
absent from other cases that have dealt with similar situations is that, and I'm going to point to cases, specifically Gonzalez versus State, which was referenced, U.S. versus Martinez, which was referenced by the Court of Appeals decision, and then State versus Rios. In all of those cases, there was testimony by the interpreters, oftentimes police interpreters, as to the nature of the interaction between themselves and the defendants in question. In all those cases, they indicated that he appears to understand. He communicated freely.
Did the court see the video, though?
The court did see the video, Your Honor. Okay. But I would just point out that if the court were to look at testimony in the entirety of the trial, the only testimony that was elicited from Officer DiNardo during her testimony was, one, that she was fluent in English and Spanish. Two, that she translated the transcripts accurately. And then three, that she was the sole interpreter. And so there is no testimony that was adduced at trial that would buttress that Garcia Tirado understood testimony from Officer DiNardo itself.
Except that he spoke Spanish for 12 years.
Again, Your Honor, I've run out of time.
Or more importantly, the video, right?
I mean, may I be allowed to respond?
Big point?
May
yes.
I be allowed to respond?
Answer any questions that's pending.
Your Honor, the video, again, was in a language which the judge did not understand.
But it was translated.
For trial, it was translated, yes, Your Honor. Correct. That was admitted to that.
Because you were talking about the interaction between the translator and the defendant, and you said those other cases differed because there was testimony regarding that.
Only in the sense that there was testimony at trial that the interpreters were present, stated that they had no difficulty communicating with the person who was interrogated. That was absent from this case.
And I was saying, but in this case, we had the actual interaction between them on a videotape,
that is
which the court saw.
That is correct. Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Call the next case.